Does anyone have any questions?
There's something that Eckhart Tolle said on one of his In Stillness Speaks that always, this seems like a riddle to me. He ended one of his sections by saying that ultimately you are always meeting yourself. And sometimes I think I take that to the extreme, or I really just don't know what that means. Do you have any
Well, in the simplest sense, the idea that you're always meeting yourself really implies that everything is yourself. And that this experience of seeing the other is really part of our lack of awareness, a lack of self-exploration, really. When you dive really deep into yourself, you begin to see that the threads of every person's being all converge, that all of these selves are manifestation of one source. And it's not something you experience with your mind, it's a direct knowing. You begin to see everything as a reflection of your true being. Everything. And when you touch that, you experience a kind of extraordinary sense of wonder and mystery, because it makes no sense, and unbelievable compassion, because you suddenly get that this is one living organism, and that your sense of being separate from that organism, or a separate part of it, is illusory. The awakened soul in a sense realizes that it is in no way a part of the whole. It is completely one with the whole. That there is no separate you. That the separate you is a form through which the whole knows itself. And at some point, you begin to see the walls that divide you from everyone coming down, and you experience an extraordinary sense of connectivity, that there is no separate you. And in a certain sense, there's a washing away over the course of what appears to be time of this sense of separation. It appears to be that we need to manifest in some sense of separateness in order to learn our non-separateness. That only by being truly, fully ourselves do we become aware of what it means for every entity to be fully itself. And every entity ultimately has to go through the process of stripping away all of the false identity, all of the sense of being somehow separate from and cut off from the other, and a slow dawning of awareness that there is nothing separating you from the other. Nothing. That it is a direct experience of who you are. That everything is a direct experience of you. It is God knowing itself. And God breaks apart, if you will, into the billions and billions of forms of its own entity, of its own being. And it's not just human being. There are so many forms of being. And we see them everywhere. And some of them are truly strange to us, truly strange to our sense of who we are, that this human nature seems to be somehow the divine expression, but it's no more divine than the slug crawling around the bottom of the pool, or the strange creatures floating through the bottom of the ocean. It's all part of this extraordinary divine expression. And when you really start to know it rather than think it, when you start to be one with it rather than to analyze it or somehow intellectualize it, this remarkable joy comes over you, this sense of awe, just deep awe, that you are one with all that is. And it is really a process of arriving at that understanding. You learn early on that the mind will never figure it out. And you put that to the mind, it becomes, as you experienced, a puzzle. How do you analyze it? So what has to start happening is a kind of non-analytic approach, where you allow yourself not to know, not to be able to understand. It's a hard thing for most Western minds, particularly, to not know something, to not figure it out, to think that somehow the mind can't own this, that it can't have it. But it's only when you start to let go of the mind that you realize this truth. Then you can bring the mind back into play, because the mind is part of it. It's not separate from it. The mind doesn't exist as a barrier to the self. It exists as a part of the self. And when you start to know that, then the mind becomes something other. It becomes another way of knowing, another way of bringing the truth into focus. And the great scientists, if you will, the great poets of the world, they let go of the mind and they touch the truth, and then they find a way with mind to state it. And the most beautiful part of human experience is that statement of truth. And we know it when we see it or when we hear it. You listen to Beethoven's symphony, and you can't say why it is so much a statement of something that touches upon the awe of being, but you know it does. You look at a certain painting, and somehow someone has taken that unspeakable truth and turned it into something that is imagistic and resonant with truth. The great poets, the great Sufi poets, you know, Rumi, Kabir, they find words that when you hear those words, they don't go into your mind and you go, oh, those are beautiful words. They go right past the mind back to that truth, and they somehow become this pathway into knowing. Great art is that. Great science is that. When people truly find the absolute statement, a good lawyer, when a lawyer finds the truth of something, there's something in all of us that goes, the truth. We're always seeking that in ourselves. We always want it. And in some ways, we're always fighting it. That's really part of the human drama, because we both have a hunger for it and a fear of it. And the fear of it is that the other threatens our uniqueness. If we're truly one with the other, then who are we? It really diminishes us as ego form. And so most people, through much of their early struggle, do not want to know that or do not want to believe it. The closest we get are through the religious teachings, like love thy neighbor as thyself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Those are our sort of approaches to that idea. But when you really get to that point, you have unbelievable struggle for most people. You know, you don't like your neighbor because they you know, they barbecue stuff that smells bad, or you know, they paint their house a color you don't want to look at, or whatever it is, and you start to fight that force, and you go, how can I love that? But it's only through loving that that this separation dissolves and you discover who you truly are. That's really the journey that we're all on. It's why you make an effort to come here on Sunday morning, because, you know, someone here is talking about it. Or because you can ask that question. You know, if you ask that question of, you know, your dad, you know, or a friend, they're going to have a hard time answering it. They won't even probably know what you're talking about. But there are certain places you can go, and this being one of them, where that at least can be brought up as a question, and there can be an attempt at an answer that might make sense to you. And that's the importance of spiritual unfolding. It's the process through which we all find who we truly are. And anyone who's sitting in this room, of course, is on the path to that. And one makes the assumption, at least I do, that there's something desirable about that path. There's something wanted, that truth is somehow essential to the condition we find ourselves in, and that untruth brings us into a place of enormous discomfort, so we're constantly trying to get out of that untruth into the truth, and that truth seems to dissolve those discomforts. It dissolves that sense of antagonism to what is. And what is, as we have talked about, and Eckhart clearly talks about, it's what you're sitting with. This is it. This is what is. No big issue. There's nothing other than this. It's just, how do you respond to that? And to see yourself in it allows you a kind of deep appreciation of what is there and how to engage it. And you can engage it with hostility, but of course you're sitting in this room, so you've learned that's not an issue. That's not going to do it. You know, some people don't know that yet. Hating the thing that is other is for many people the safest thing they can do. Being violent against the other is the only thing they know how to do. But after a period of time, you realize how counterproductive that is. People who are violent against the other have enormous karmic consequence. And that consequence plays itself out in your lifetime or in multiple lifetimes, and finally you realize it's not the way. It's just not the way. It doesn't get you there. Somehow it does just the opposite. It makes it worse. And so you keep trying all of these experimental approaches until finally you go, there's another approach, which is love, what is. And that takes a real training. It takes a real effort, especially when a lot of the stuff that is so odious to you. So what do you do when you find this stuff that smells bad or that you don't like or that you're afraid of? Well, the thing you don't do is run from it. The other thing you don't do is attack it. You go toward it. You go toward it and you go, I don't get you. I don't understand what this fear thing is. I don't know what this pain is, but I know that it is. And it is because it has manifested as part of the truth. And my reaction to it at this moment in time is complicated, but I don't want it to be complicated. So let me know this thing I am afraid of. Let me know this thing I am rejecting. Let me know the part of what is that I can't accept. And you go toward that, and you watch what happens to you as you go toward it. Your heart will close. There will be trembling sometimes. There will be a huge desire to turn away. There will be all of these forces that say, no, 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 this is dangerous, this is dangerous. But what is it dangerous to? It's dangerous to your illusion. It's dangerous to your sense of separateness. But it's not dangerous to the truth. And so you enter into the very thing you are afraid of, and you watch it. You can enter into it emotionally, even intellectually. You can examine it, but you move toward it, and then watch what takes place. What takes place is a dissolution, a dissolving of that thing. Because the known fear is much less powerful than the unknown fear. And as you enter into it, it starts to reveal itself for what it is. It teaches you a great lesson about yourself. And it shows you that the very thing that you were not accepting is something that is crucial to your growth. And that's how you evolve as a human being, as a spiritual being. And you go deeper and deeper and deeper until there are none of those things left. The only problem is, the deeper you go, the more fundamental and more powerful the hidden ones are. The stuff that you have really, really not wanted to examine. The stuff that you really can't afford to look at because it's the linchpin in your ego-centeredness. It's the very core of it. That's the thing you have to get to in the end. And it's the most terrifying for everyone. So that spiritual life, rather than releasing you from your fear and your terror, leads you toward it. And a lot of people don't like that. And so you go a certain number of steps in your spiritual unfolding, and then you go, I don't think so. And then you give up your spiritual path. Many people give it up. Because rather than giving them peace and security, it's doing exactly the opposite. It's taking away all of your peace and security. It's taking everything away. And then finally, if you're lucky, you get it. You go, it's taking everything away. And then you start to really go into the stuff that you really, really don't want to touch. Because it's full of shame, and it's full of terror, and it's full of ugliness and non-beauty and all that other stuff that you don't want to accept as yours. But whose else is it? And by finally going there with clear mind, clear purpose, Rudy would say, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, even though I'm shitting in my pants every step of the way." That was his line, and that was an important line. And everybody who is growing spiritually is shitting in their pants and moving forward. It's the only way to do it, unless you're really lucky and you don't shit in your pants. But I haven't met anybody like that, and I'm not like that. So it's your journey. But that's the journey we're on. Embrace it, love it, and realize that that person on the street who you think is the person you least want to accept in your life is the person you have to accept, one way or another. Well, I would love to write a movie saying all of that. Thank you. I don't know if it would be a hit. I find it very hard to take all of these ideas and put them into dramatic form. For whatever reason, it's been very difficult for me. So I try to take what's put in front of me and simply put the best spin on it as I can. Because I don't always have the clarity, if you will, to make that statement in dramatic context. For whatever reason, I seem to be able to do it through direct pointing. So if that ever comes to me as something in that way, if that thing descended upon me and said, "This is the story that needed to be told," I would be grateful for that to arrive. But I haven't found it yet. I mean, every movie I do has what I call an idea, a sentence, an idea or a concept that is embedded within it. And I realized early in my career that writing a movie allows you to have, each movie is a sentence. And that if I had a full career, by the end of it, I would have a paragraph that I would have written and put out there. And in truth, if you go back and look at the movies, they all have something, I think, in most cases, worthy to say to adults and to children and to a broad group of people. And I'm proud of them as a whole. They all kind of, even when I had very little to do with them, and even when they got totally co-opted, still somehow carried a message through. But trying to get this whole message out there as a movie has eluded me completely. That's all I can tell you.
In a way, a follow-up to that question, because in a way I struggle to find dramatic form for ideas and feelings that have personal resonance for me. I also struggle to find a life form for the ideas you're talking about. Just the idea of going deeper. What is, how to live that? On the simplest level, find this, the struggle to raise money to make movies and just pay the rent. And they almost feel like, sometimes they feel like two separate ideas, like this idea of going deeper is a more rarefied life that doesn't really line up with the daily life.
I know it feels like
trying to go deeper.
I know it feels like that, but it's not true. I mean, let me put it this way. Going deeper is an idea that somehow functions in some conceptual way, but what does it really mean to go deeper? To go deeper is to meet the situation head on and not blink. To be right there with it as it unfolds. And what does that mean? To feel it, if you will, not just as an ego entity in a sort of frozen position where you're trying to get what you want, but in a position where that which is in front of you starts to open, and you literally feel it as a kind of chakra opening. You feel your mind open, you feel your ego-centeredness open up and get freer, you feel your heart open, you feel your gut open, you feel your renewal energy, that sexual energy open, and you feel this thing at the base of your spine that just feels like a flush of availability. It's like this rising current of capacity that just moves up through you and gets delivered to the thing that's in front of you, the situation, with enormous presence, enormous consciousness. You are just there with it. You're not there manipulating it. You're not there working it. You're just there. And sometimes you're there and it's not working, which is really interesting. I had a pitch meeting last week or so ago. It didn't work. It was really interesting to me. And I realized it's not working because of me. It's not working because it doesn't want to work. There were all of these very difficult and obstructive forces in the room. Primarily, one of them was that I was telling this idea for a movie to these people who wanted to make this movie, who, as I was speaking, were seeing everything wrong with their movie as I was speaking. That the basic core idea of the movie was problematic, and they had never seen it before. And I'm talking to them, and I'm watching them step back and back and back and back. But rather than shy away, I just stayed enormously present with it and allowed whatever the outcome would be to be, because I had no control over that. The only control I had was to be with them in that room, watching and being part of this process. And the more open I was, the deeper I was in that, the more truth came out. And the truth for them was, this is not the way this movie should work. And I knew that as I was watching them. They didn't know their own movie. And the movie that I brought them made it clear to them that this was not the way they wanted to go, which was very important to the situation. I may never get this job, or I may, but it didn't matter to me, because as much as I wanted an outcome, what I really want is truth, the right thing to be, the thing that needs to be. And that is exactly what will happen. The universe will bring you exactly what it wants to bring you. Now, sometimes it brings you less money than you want, less comfort, real struggle, real pain, real suffering. And then you really go, well, I'm having a spiritual life. Why should it bring me all this stuff? Well, the question is, why should it not bring you that stuff? What makes you special? Nothing. Nothing. The only thing that a spiritual life brings you is a way of being present with that very struggle that every human being has. You can either be present with the struggle, or you can be pretending it's not happening, or running away from it, or shut down, or angry. You have a billion responses, but the best response I have found is to be completely open and present. And that presence has within it depth. It has the depth of consciousness, the depth of the universe. It also has this extraordinary way of showing you when your ego is getting in the way. Because the minute your ego gets in the middle of that situation, it comes like fire. Especially when you're really, really trying to open, everything that is separate and self-serving looks ugly and inopportune and untimely and wrong. It's just not the way it should be. And you see it. And if you react to that, then you really shut down. Then everything goes really bad. But if you just watch that happen, it burns itself up in truth. You can even say to somebody, I messed up, or I don't, or look at, I'm having a problem with the way I'm presenting this. Let me try it again, or let me say that I feel this thing is happening between us and I think we should talk about it differently. Whatever the thing is, it brings you to a place of honesty, and honesty and truth resonate in a profound way in human interaction and in dealing with the world. And right now, we're in a wonderfully communal situation where almost everyone is struggling. Really interesting time. Almost everyone is struggling. So what can you do? You can go, you can be upset about your struggling, or you can go, I get it. We're all in this together. We're all having a difficult time on some level. I mean, a few people aren't, but most people are having a bit of a difficult time. And once you understand that, this door opens to the compassion that you need to feel for everyone else. The universe wants to bring us the best. Truly. It wants to bring us the best. The body wants to heal. The mind wants to arrive at the highest understanding. Scientists want to get at the core of the problem. Economists want to solve the economy. Everything is moving toward the best. And if we become part of that and allow it, it will do that. It really will do that. You have to trust. You just have to really trust and be willing to do the work. Again, the work, be present. Be present. Don't be lazy. Don't be obstructive. Don't get in your own way. Just meet it. Meet it 100%. And watch what happens. You can't get more deep than 100%. You can't. You may not feel that depth, but you will be in touch with that depth, because the depth is the connection between you and the infinite. And it is never not there. Ever. You may not be in touch with it in the moment, but that has nothing to do with it, and everything to do with your doubt, your fear, your concern, your passion, your smallness of being, in a way. Let go of that. It takes great courage. Great courage. And also not to get the outcome you want and still be available. I mean, my life is an unending miracle, truly, of things going wrong and repairing themselves in ways that I can't even describe. And it happens constantly. It happened last week. I mean, I talked about this one movie that has, it's such a long story, I don't want to go into it, but a movie that caused me more grief than anything I've ever done in my entire life. It has been the source of writing one of the best things I've ever done and having the worst experience with the way I was treated in the business. Well, I finally saw the film a week ago that resulted from all this, and it was, I told someone the other day, of all the movies I've seen this year, it's the best movie I've seen. I have no idea how it became that. It had every reason not to be that. It has been an unbelievable battle and a constant struggle for me to stay open and allow this process to happen. This process is the most transformative process I've had through my career, dealing with something that goes completely and continually wrong. On the other hand, it added up to something so beautiful. And one, it's a really good movie, but two, the director and I, who were in terrible confrontation through this whole process, reconnected in the most beautiful way. I mean, I'm saying everything came back in a place that would never have happened if I had at any point expressed the anger and antagonism that I felt. I didn't need to do that. I just stayed open. It's been a great teaching. I've had so many teachings of that kind, because life is what it must be. And if you don't get caught up in your own drama, you allow it to be the best version of itself. You just allow it to be that, and it will become that. Again, as I said, the way the body heals, the way scientists arrive at solutions, we find the solution of our lives by allowing life to be itself. You do that with extraordinary depth when you just allow it to be serviced by the depth of being. Does that?
Yeah. It's almost why I never ask a question, because it always seems like the answer to all questions is work harder, open more deeply. Every time I'm last, I say, oh, just work harder.
Well, it's kind of work harder, but the idea of working harder means for most people a kind of unbelievable effort. And really, in a certain sense, it's the opposite of that. It's don't work so hard, let it be. When the time comes to do the work, it's the productive part, but it's not the reactive part. It's not the part of, I've got to really work hard to open. Because the tension of trying to work hard to open is really about tension. And this isn't about tension, it's about, it hurts. It really hurts. This movie experience was hurtful for 2 years. It was, or more. It went on for 4.5 years, really, from the very beginning. It was hurtful. But the more I relaxed, I just went, well, it's just another thing. It's just another thing in the long line of things that come at us that don't seem to work. But what's so amazing to me is when you really do not struggle with them, or when they come up, you look at them, and what's your choice? You can either sit there and, you know, go, I got to do battle with this, or you just go, here it is again. And the minute you do that, it just kind of falls away. So that the stuff keeps arising, but you just don't engage it. And you don't have to work hard to do that. You just have to go, boop, don't do it. Why bother? Don't engage. And it becomes very simple. And you just stay open. And again, depth is really not digging, it's being present. You can't be deeper than being present, with all that implies. Being present means you and your infinite self are in this moment. How bigger can you get and deeper can you get than infinite? You can't. But you can allow that to be, and the more you surrender, it is. It just is. And you go, oh. Now, again, I've said this so many times, but it took me years to get that. That's the problem. It took me years to understand, oh, it is, right now, right in this second. And it's a kind of like little switch. It goes, huh. And it's amazing. It's completely amazing. How do you throw that switch? I can't tell you. It gets thrown through your journey. And your journey is, unfortunately, doing it the wrong way a billion times until you go, oh. So if you don't do it the wrong way, you probably won't get to oh. But you won't do it the wrong way if you're not trying. So here you are. You're fighting the battle, and you are. And you know, I've known you a long time. I've watched nothing but incredible transformation. So you're still in it. We're all in it. Just keep at it. Anyone else?
In getting to that point of the presence, I found that there's been a lot of struggle with regret and knowing that rationally it doesn't do any good, it's a total waste of energy and everything. But at the same time, seeing decisions that were made that seem to have manifested, you know, people you trusted or just said, you know, like, seem to manifest in more and more negative results, if you will.
Well, let me counteract what you're saying, that regret is a waste of time. Until about 2 years ago, in fact, it was this film that I'm describing with this horrible journey, I really did something that completely undermined myself. And I got fired from the movie as a result of it, which was a deeply, deeply painful experience. I experienced at that moment regret unlike any regret I've ever known. And I haven't known much regret in my life for whatever reason, but suddenly I had regret. I could not stop thinking about it. I kept trying to relive the moment that caused this regret. And I kept going back to it over and over, and I couldn't avoid it. It kept coming back endlessly. And every time it did, it brought the same suffering, the same pain, the same kind of you're an idiot kind of reaction to oneself. And I started to realize this wasn't going to go away. So how could I use it? And what started to take place for me is that it became like the best shovel I've ever had in terms of going deeper. Because every time it rose up in my mind, which was pretty often, like 4 a.m, you know, in the shower, sitting on the toilet, driving in the car, this thing would come up and my heart would just break with regret. And so I just kept watching it, saying, I know you're coming. I could feel you. I know it's there. Here we are. Here it goes. And I got to the point where I could actually see it doing its number and not cave into it. It did its whole thing. It had its emotional run. It did its whole sort of powerful attack on my ego and on my mind. And I just kept watching it. It was awful experience, but it became the most unbelievable gift because it pushed me deeper and deeper into acceptance than anything else that had ever happened in my life. Regret became the tool of my emergence. And I am nothing but grateful to it. And again, the magic of it has been that this whole situation has turned into something wonderful. Really wonderful. That doesn't always, I suppose, happen. But it has happened. And I have learned so much from this thing. But the biggest thing I've learned is that constancy of regret is a tool if you use it well, and it will bury you if you don't. It's totally your choice. If you're growing spiritually, you get to use it, because every time it comes up, you cannot avoid it. You can either gnaw on it and start to get really, really furious and give yourself a bad week or a bad month or a bad year, or you can just go, here it is again, open, watch it do its thing. Watch what it does to your psyche. Watch how it plays itself out. And then become aware, as I always say, of the part that's watching. Because it's not touched by it. It's not affected by it. This is just a thing that's going on in your psyche that is trying to work itself through to something deeper and more important. The only outcome of life that's meaningful in the end is awakening. Not the solution to the problem that was brought about by the thing that you regret. That will not have brought you into happiness. It will not have brought you into awakening. The thing that you regret taking place, having it not have happened, will not have brought you to what you want. What you truly want comes as a result of regret. It's beyond understanding on some level. But all I can say is working with the very thing that has come at you is the tool to your freedom, the very mechanism that will awaken you. So the next time it comes up, and I can see it's still playing itself within you, and will have, believe me, it'll be back any number of times, know that you can work with it. Know that you can say yes to it instead of no. Rather than hitting yourself over the head and going, what an idiot you are, just go, thank you. Thank you. It's hard. It takes a kind of courage, but you are full of that courage. You truly are. It's a real essential part of you. And you have it. Use it. Face this stuff. Stare it down. Don't fight it, but just look like that. It's real. It's intense. It may be the most intense thing in your life. That's why it's so valuable. To be afraid of it or to keep putting it away as it shouldn't be. Well, it is. It is. There it is. You can't fight that. It is. It is in a profound way. Own it. It's yours. I mean, the moment of my regret And again, I don't want to spend time with the whole story, and I think I've told it in other classes, but it was a speech I gave at the National Theater Owners Conference. And just so you get the quick picture, I was being honored as the screenwriter of the year for the National Theater Owners, and there were all these tables of all these people, you know, the star of the year, Shia LaBeouf, and all these people, and here I am as part of that, and I'm going into this speech. That first of all, I was told I didn't have to make a speech, but then suddenly everybody's making these amazing speeches, so I have to go up and make a speech to say thank you for this award. And I figure, well, what am I going to say? So the simplest thing for any writer to say is, without the writer, none of us would be here. So I said, that's what I'll go up and I'll say that. I'll make that speech to these 3,000 people sitting out here in Las Vegas. So I'm about to go up and get my award, and the announcer, the woman who's announcing me, says, and without the writer, none of us would be here. And I went, there's my speech. So I went, And I'm walking up onto this platform to give my speech, and all these thousands of people are looking at me. And I go into this very Zen moment. I don't say anything. I think rather than saying without the writer, none of us would be here, I would just demonstrate that. So for about a minute, I just looked at people. And you could hear these little nervous laughs getting more and more uncomfortable. And then something in me said, okay, now you can make your speech. And then something else in me said, you just made it. So I took the award, said thank you, and left the stage. And the minute I walked away, I said, I just made the right speech to the wrong audience. And I felt like an idiot. And I went, oh, can I go back up there and say something? But I was already down in my seat. And as I'm sitting there, my son Ari looks over at me and he goes, own it, Dad. It's the wisest statement as I've ever heard in my life, and it took me a year to own it. And worse than that, the head of the company for whom I am sitting at that table and who has made all this possible has gone off to watch the opening of another one of his movies. And I think he never showed up at this evening, at this gathering. And meanwhile, the heads of all these other studios are there, and the head of the studio with my film isn't there. Well, it turns out he had walked in the room the minute I went on the stage. And my son Ari said, Dad, Bob came in the room just as you went up there. I said, really? And I turned around, and he gave me the dirtiest look I have ever seen in my life. And the minute this thing was over, he said, did you thank me? And I said, no. And he wouldn't talk to me for 2 days and fired me from the best movie I had ever written as a result of that moment. So you can understand the kind of pain that came out of that stupid moment. And I went back over it. Why did I not say something? All I had to do was say, thank you, Bob. That's all I had to do. And my whole life would have been different. But I hadn't said it. So I had to live with that, and I tried apologizing. I tried everything. It didn't matter. I got fired. And other people worked on the script, and the movie got worse. And then there came the time for it to get, we had to decide who gets credit for this movie, and I read the final draft of the script, and I hate it. But they have promoted me as the sole writer of this movie, which no longer represents what I had done. And I'm going, should I fight for this? Well, there was a huge amount of money on the table, so I said, I'm going to fight for this. It was one of the biggest battles of my life to get credit on that movie, because there are other people who thought they should deserve the credit, and I had to say they didn't. And I went through one of the great battles that I've ever gone through, and I won it, and then it was challenged, and I had to fight it again. All of this kind of stuff, and then I saw the movie a week ago, and it was wonderful. It suffered from some of the problems that had I stayed on it, it wouldn't have. But in the end, it had the very essence of what I had brought to it in the beginning, which was an unbelievable heart. Unbelievable heart. And beautiful. So this was a story of unbearable regret. And the year of that regret that I went through, and there's much more to this story, because I had tried to get this movie 4 years ago and wasn't given it. So other people wrote this movie before me. So it went on for a very long time, and what came out of it was a kind of washing away a washing away of my own stuff. One other element to this, and it's kind of interesting, I hate Las Vegas. And so I'm sitting in Las Vegas, and everybody else is out at the gambling tables, and I didn't want to go gamble all morning. So I listened to a recording of a tape by this guy, Adi Ashanti, who is a really wonderful sort of awakened guy. And I listened to it, and he talked about the power of suffering in awakening. And I thought, well, I don't have hardly any suffering in my life. You know, it's just I just don't have that. It's not I don't live at that space. And I know when I went up on that stage and chose to say nothing, I felt you are giving yourself an opportunity for some amazing suffering. And I kind of consciously chose it. And it came at me with full force. And I really got the lesson. I truly got the lesson. So, when you talk about regret, I can relate to regret thanks to this experience, and I can relate to the regret of every human being I know, and most people I know have it. I also understand how absolutely insufferable it is and how pointless it is, because it can't do anything. You can't change what was any more than you can change what is. And when you finally get that, and you realize how to use this thing, it becomes one of the greatest gifts ever given to human beings. As hard as that may seem. Long answer to your question. Anybody else?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just what you were saying is like grief or regret or any of those things that we want to label as bad, if you just look at it as a force.
Absolutely.
If it were missing.
Yeah, no, if it's missing, your life doesn't have enough grist for the mill, really.
Yeah.
That's sort of what you need. We all need it. And if your life doesn't provide it for you, Rudy said, well, then you teach and let everybody else's stuff become your stuff, which kind of works, but there's still your own stuff. And this dug up stuff I didn't even know was there. So it was all completely valuable. Okay. Thank you all very much.